welcome to the latest episode of Harmonious World. My name is Hilary Seabrook, and I'm delighted to be joined for this episode by guitarist Tom Guana. Tom has a new album out right now. It's called Reimagine, and it's on Spirit Science Records. In fact, I'm talking to Tom on the day of the album release, which is 9th of June. In this album, Tom takes the guitar jazz repertoire and recreates some of the real classic tracks, including the one you're listening to right now, which is Who Does She Hope to Be?, which is a song by Sonny Sheriff. Sonny Sharrock was a very famous guitarist who died in 1994 at the age of just 53. I think Sonny Sharrock is often regarded as one of the people who, through the 90s, revived the jazz guitar sound. And I hope you enjoy listening to Tom's version of this and some of the other tracks on this album. But then I hope you enjoy listening to my conversation with Tom Guana, talking about his album Reimagine.
Hello.
Hey. So congratulations, today is the day Reimagine is released.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
That's brilliant. It's a great album. Thank you for joining me to discuss it on Harmonious World.
Thank you for having me, and I'm glad you like it. Thank you.
Yeah, and I really like your choice of tracks. I've started with Who Does She Hope to Be? And that's not a song I'd known at all.
You know, that record, the Sonny Sharrock record, Ask the Ages, I think it was recorded in 1991. And a lot of my musician friends over the years have talked about that record. And I really didn't get on the bandwagon. I went bandwagon with it. I didn't listen to it for a long time. I have to say till about maybe 8 years ago or something. And when I listened to it, I was like, oh, man, how did I miss the boat on this one, you know? It's a beautiful record, and that particular song, Who Does She Hope to Be, is a beautiful ballad.
It really is. It's lovely. And I think, because he died quite young, didn't he?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and I think there's so many people who you feel like, well, if you created one song, that if you left behind one song that's as beautiful as that, then you've done your job.
Yeah, good point. Absolutely.
Yeah. So how did you go about choosing the tracks to put on this album?
Well, the tracks on the record were basically songs that I have been listening to for years and or playing for years in their original form, you know, the way they were written by the composers. Obviously, Who Does She Hope to Be? I really didn't play before. That's when I was listening to and got hip to about 8 years ago. So that's been in my rotation, you know, listening to that. But all the other songs I've played on gigs and, you know, with other musicians. And when I went about picking songs for this record, I wanted to pick songs that I was feeling connected to, you know, at the time. And also songs that weren't really played to death.
Right.
You know, I didn't really want to do a whole record of standards that, you know, just for the sake of doing it, you know. So I was really choosy about and conscious about what songs I wanted to have on the recording.
Yeah. The track I'm going to put in the middle of this is the McCoy Tyner Search for Peace.
Many musicians play that. You know, that particular song out of all the songs on the recording, that one is played a lot by musicians. I've played that on and off over the years with a lot of different people, and I've heard a lot of people play it and or record it. And I just really love that song, and I really wanted to do it. So I started experimenting with changing its original feel. You know, harmonically and melodically, I didn't change anything in the arranging process. All I did was change the meter from 4-4 to 3-4 because I felt like it really worked as a slow 3-4 song. And I don't think I've heard anyone record it that way. And it worked. You know, it really came out nice. I was happy with it.
But I do like what you did with that in terms of that changing it to 3-4. What prompted that?
You know, I've, like I said prior, I had been playing it on and off with people in its traditional form, being 4-4, slow, you know, a ballad. And I don't know, I was just playing it one day, you know, in my practice room, messing around with it. And I just started to feel it in 3-4. And I said, oh, wow, this... there could be something here. So I just started, you know, treating the song that way in 3-4. And then when, you know, I got together with Pat and Jason to play a little bit, we tried it and I was like, wow, this sounds good. So there it was.
Yeah. So my next question was going to be about, so you've got organist Pat Bianchi and drummer Jason Tiemann. So, yeah, I love the stuff that Pat does, especially on the organ. That's really interesting. That must have been great when you discovered him.
Well, yeah, Pat's one of the masters of the B3. You know, it was with Pat Martino for many years, Lou Donaldson. I mean, you name it. He's you know, he's been around for a while, and he's just one of the masters of the B3. I met Pat a long time ago. I would have to say He moved to New York, I think, in the early 2000s, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 2002, 2003, something like that. And we connected then and started playing then. And then he moved back to Colorado for a while and then moved back to New York a number of years later. So we've been playing on and off together since, early 2000s. I've done a bunch of gigs with his own groups, and we've done gigs with other people's groups. And so he's been in my musical life for a long time, and he's an old friend.
Yeah, and how about Jason? How did you hook up with him?
Jason, I saw actually playing with Eric Alexander, and I believe it was up at Smoke, the Club Smoke up at uptown in Manhattan. I believe that's where it was, and it was maybe like 2 or 3 years before COVID. Maybe around 2016 or something. I think we spoke for a little bit, and then I wound up on someone else's gig with him playing drums, and I don't remember whose gig that was. And when I initially heard him with Eric, I was like, man, this guy sounds really good. Just, has a very, very broad knowledge of the jazz drumming tradition and beyond. And he has his own voice, and I really liked his sound and his feel. And he's a great guy. After meeting him, I was like, oh man, this is someone that I'd like to play with. And we wound up on a gig together, and maybe a year or so after I initially saw him and heard him with Eric Alexander. And it was great. We had a really fun time on the gig, and that's kind of when the wheel started turning about. Maybe that would be, I thought Pat and Jason would make a really good combination. And unknown to me, they had been playing together already in other people's gigs. I probably assumed that they knew each other because the music community in New York is, the jazz community in particular, is small. It's a small circle. There's many musicians, but we kind of all know each other and our acquaintances. So it wasn't a surprise when he was like, oh man, I've been playing with gigs, tons of gigs with Jason.
Oh, that's great. So tell me a little bit about your background. How did you get into the guitar, and have you always lived in New York?
Born in Brooklyn, lived in Staten Island for a number of years, did my high school years, elementary school and high school in Staten Island. Then after graduating high school, I went to Brooklyn College for classical guitar, actually, and composition. Studied there for about 3 years and realized that I didn't have a deep, deep passion for the classical guitar, because I just enjoyed doing other things. And I was actually in a program I didn't know at the time. This was around 1986. It was all Juilliard faculty at Brooklyn College, which was kind of a satellite program they were doing. So I got to study with, Robert Starrer, who was a major composer, Noah Kraszewski, Robert Dodge, I think his name is. He was one of the, pioneers of electronic music. Tanya Leone, who's a pretty well-known composer. All these teachers were my they were my teachers. Itzhak Perlman was there. I used to page turn for his string quartets, his rehearsals. When I was on break, I would go in the room and turn pages. So it was a pretty unbelievable experience. But and I got a really good education, both theoretically, and the guitar program was pretty rigorous. It was led by a really great guitarist named Michael Cedric Smith at the time, but he brought in David Starobin, Julian Bream. We had tons of master classes with that level of person, although people. And although I loved playing the classical guitar for it, I was around people that they've been playing classical guitar since they were three. That's all they were going to do. That was their main thing. It wasn't my main thing. And
No.
that really kind of brought to the forefront for me, well, if you're going to do this, you have to do this. Not to say that you couldn't dabble in other things, but I didn't just want to dabble in other things. I have more of a passion for improvising, So I left after 3 years and I went to Musicians Institute in California. And I was around people like Joe Pass and Scott Henderson and Frank Gambale and just like a bunch of guitar players that I had been listening to, you know, their records. And that's where I wanted to go. And it was a 1-year vocational program. And after graduating from there, I wasn't too fond of LA at the time. The music scene at the time that I was there was, you know, was more along the smooth jazz lines. It's very different now, the scene there. So I moved back to New York to be around kind of the music that I wanted to be around. And that's, you know, I wound up back in New York again. That's where I've been since.
Right. Oh, that's amazing. It's lovely, isn't it, when you realize that the people that you probably weren't, you know, aware at the time of the quality of the people that you were, you know, that were around, because they were just the people that were around. And then you suddenly go, hang on a moment, that's not what everyone does.
Yeah, you mean in respect to Brooklyn College? I had no idea who those people were. I did know that it was serious business, though.
Right.
Because those classes, that program was no joke. Obviously, I didn't have it anything to compare it to, because that's my first college experience. But I knew it was, you know, I could tell that it was serious business. And then years later, you know, I spent 3 years there. So over the years, I did kind of start finding out about these people.
Right.
And
yeah,
who
of
they were and what, you know, what they've accomplished and their contributions to music. But it really wasn't till later in my life that I was like, holy cow, like I was around these people. Like, what, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was very lucky in that
way.
That's
really good. So what are the plans for touring this album now, Reimagine?
Well, that's kind of what I'm working on right now. I don't know. I mean, I'm working on some dates. I have some local dates, you know, some dates in New York and in the tri-state area around New York. But I'm really focusing on trying to get abroad, get to Europe, get to Asia. So that there's a lot of things pending. So I really don't have anything solid right now.
Right. But people presumably can keep an eye on your website.
Yeah, tomguarna.com, and I will be posting dates and tours and as they come in.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I'm really grateful.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate you having me and the support.
Thank you for joining me once more on Harmonious World. I hope you enjoyed listening to my conversation with Tom Guarna. His album, Reimagine, is out now. And if you go to tomguarna.com, you can find out how to get hold of a copy. Do remember that you can subscribe to Harmonious World, which means that you get additional podcast episodes. Thank you for joining me once more. Please do have a very harmonious week. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Harmonious World. My name is Hilary Seabrook, and it's a great delight to bring this series of discussions with musicians and composers and writers and all sorts of people to you. Obviously, there's no point in having a podcast if people aren't listening, and I'm very grateful to my listeners for doing so. Thanks also to Joe English for composing and performing this new theme tune. So wherever you get your podcast, you can leave a review. You can share this with your friends and family, either as a link or on social media and that sort of thing. I'd be really grateful for that. Don't forget that you can subscribe now. There's a link wherever you get your podcasts. So have a great week, and please remember why I started this, which is just to try and make the world a little more harmonious. Thanks for listening to Harmonious World.